Everybody's having a good Wednesday. It's hump day. Hump day. You know what day it is, and you know what that means. That means that you only have two more days of the work week for most of you. Of course, for others, you know, I do apologize for what you may have to go through for the next couple of days, a little longer. But, hey, just look at the bright side. Your paycheck will reflect your work time. Okay, anyway, I just thought I'd put that out there. Anyway, welcome to Let's Talk on Blog Talk Radio. I am your host, Mr. Talk, and today we have an outstanding show planned for you. You know, who is America's real enemy? And I think that's a very legitimate question, and we're going to be discussing that a little bit today and getting your opinions and, you know, thoughts on that subject, that particular subject. And of course, as always, you know, we're going to bring a little pre-starter in as far as, you know, what we're going to get the conversation started on. And man, I got a good one for you today. We're going to talk a little bit about that $15 minimum wage that got started in, that Seattle voted in. Boy, is that a precedent of what? You know, we're going to talk a little bit about that. Just, man, we're going to have to get into that a little bit, because $15 an hour just to throw burgers at McDonald's or Burger King is just really, really, that's all I can say. It's one of those things that just make you shake your head. You know what I mean? So that's what we'll be discussing also today, you know, as well as who, you know what, with that going on right there, that may be the enemy is who I think it is. But, you know, I'm not going to give you my opinion yet. We're going to go ahead and let y'all get y'all opinion in. But before I do, let me bring my co-host in, Mr. Akeem, a.k.a. Cloud Nation Radio. What's going on, brother? How you doing today?
Oh, I'm sorry, I was muting myself. Man, I feel good, man. Like I said, man, I feel smoother than Don Draper right now, you know, and for those who watch Mad Men.
All right. I don't watch it, but I know what you're talking about. I do. I do. Oh, man. So what do you think about today's topic? Any pre-thoughts about it?
Oh man, this is an exciting discussion. It's interesting because right after you said we would talk about this, I got a chance to watch something called The Science of Evil. It was a documentary from National Geographic. So I think it gave me a little reference material to discuss about this topic today. So I'm excited about it. I think it's a deep discussion. I don't know if we'll be able to cover everything in this segment, but I'm just interested to see, you know, everybody's perspective on who the real enemy is.
Yes, sir. That's what I'm talking about. And you know what? I'm glad you mentioned that. It's a deep topic because I was wondering myself. I say, well, should I just leave this as a one day, one part show? Then I'm glad you. So what we don't cover today, we're going to cover tomorrow. Okay, let's just put it that way. So y'all know, you know, we're talking about the same thing tomorrow, you know, because I want us to get a little deep into this as far as, you know, why you think the enemy is who you think it is and, you know, how can we combat it if we even can. So, no, those are the topics. I mean, that's what we're going to talk about today. So I'm glad my co-host is on board and he ready. So I know a couple other individuals already also. But before we do, y'all know I got to go ahead and put the information out. If you want to be a part of the show today, there's three ways you can be a part, live anyway. You can give us a call at 347-838-8622. You can email us at ericletstalk@gmail.com or join us in the chat room where we always have an outstanding conversation. And you just have to go to www.blogtalkradio.com/Mr. Talk. And those are all the ways you can participate live in the show. And we look forward to hearing from you because we do welcome all callers and, you know, all people, anybody want to join in the chat room. Now, let me give you this precursor, of course. Now, if you just log into the chat room as a guest, only thing you can do is watch the conversation. Okay, you will not be able to participate. However, if you log in using a Facebook, Instagram, or whatever social media you use, then you will be able to come on and participate in the chat room and, you know, drop messages and things like that. Of course, there are certain rules that must be followed, especially on this show, and that's no personal attacks. Whether you're in the chat room or on the line, we don't do personal attacks on this show. Your language, please watch your language, okay? Please, please, please watch your language. Now, usually I don't say please, but I'm being nice today. Please watch your language, because if you don't, you're going to get dealt with, okay? I know if some conversations, you know, we get kind of heated and certain things slip out, okay, you get one alibi. But other than that, it's hot and popping, okay, once you do it. So that's all I got to say about it, all right? And of course, no use of the N-word, the C-word, the W-word, any word that's derogatory toward anyone. You do not use that here on this show, okay? We are a civilized show, and we like to conduct ourselves in that manner. And so we ask you to do the same, all right? So thank you. All right, now, time to get a shout-outs in the chat room. We got Antoinette, my chat room coordinator in the house. Of course, we got my co-host there, Mr. Cloud Nation Radio. Then we got the intellectual H2O in the house, deep, deep, deep. And then we got Divine Design. We got guest 1044, guest 996. And then we got my cousin in the house, Open Talk with Les Jackson. So that's it, man. I mean, we got the switchboard hot and popping already. So there's nothing else to do but what? Get on with the get on. That's the way I look at it. You know, why hold up? Let's get started. All right. So let me bring these two callers in and let's make it happen, y'all. Let's see. First caller, 111. Who do I have here?
It's two B's.
Hey, Beasley.
B. Brown Beasley.
What's up, Brown Beasley? How are you? All right.
Good. Happy Wednesday to everybody.
That's right. Outstanding. Happy Wednesday. Let me bring the other caller in. Let's see. 111, welcome to the show. Who do I have here?
Hey, Eric Cloud Beasley. How you guys doing?
Hey, how you doing, Joe?
I wanted to say something. As I was listening to you, it occurred to me that you are, if not the, one of the most consumer-friendly hosts, okay, on BTR, which also made me think you're consumer-friendly. You like to make the show friendly for consumers, for the people who are listening to your show and for the people in the chat room. And what I'm getting to is this. I strongly encourage you, and I'm being very serious now. Have you ever thought about being a businessman, opening up your own business?
Okay, yeah.
Okay, then you should do it. The number one requisite, and Beasley would back me up on this, outside of, you know, where you're going to get your customers, is being a boss that's a good boss to the, you know, of course, to the employers. But again, thinking of how can I satisfy my customers? Because if you can think that way, then the other problems will kind of melt away. All right? Because most bosses in America, most entrepreneurs, do not have a freaking clue about what it takes to run a business. The number one prerequisite would be to find out how can I get customers, how can I make them repeat customers, how can I please my customer. So I would encourage you, honestly, seriously, and Beasley, you back me up on this because you're a closer, all right?
That's how I make my living.
Okay. So would you think that I was right in my estimate?
Yeah, well, keeping your customers happy is what's happening.
Yeah. So I think that, Eric, I think that if anybody on BTR that I know, okay, outside of those who already have an inclination towards being entrepreneurs and they probably pursue it already, I would encourage you to seriously look into opening up a business with you as the boss. Doesn't mean it'll be easy. You work 12, 14 hours a day at the beginning. But, okay, I think you're suited for it.
Well, you know what? Well, thank you, Joe. And I'm taking that as a compliment, so thank you.
Well, of course it's a compliment.
Well, you know, sometimes it'd be backwards compliment, so I just have to say, well, thank you, and, you know, I will take that under consideration.
Okay.
You know, I have thought about it, but, you know, my mental condition isn't in tune to with that sometimes, but
okay.
we can make that work, though. We'll talk offline,
All right.
Know, one way or another. All right?
Sure.
All right. Ooh, Joe, boy, I'm telling you. Me and Joe have come a long way, especially that Joe, man. Because I remember when we first started doing the show, oh, man, y'all just don't know, Joe was out of control. I mean, Joe was out of control, y'all.
I was like what Beasley is now.
You know, but Joe has changed quite a lot. Show has the show also, but, you know, that's why some say, well, why y'all letting you let Joe talk a long time? Well, me and Joe been together a long time. And, you know, we know, and I know some things and some conversations Joe that had on the show that just would make you fall out and laugh. But,
like I said, I was like what Beasley is now. Well, Beasley Beasley's more like on this show, not as rambunctious as he is in other shows. I'm not saying it's a bad thing, but I know what people don't know what Eric's talking about. I mean, I'm unrestrained. You know, I usually don't talk that much now, but I was on a very long leash. I would say anything I wanted anytime I wanted.
yeah. But we had to reel them in a little bit. So it's all good. It's all good. You know, I just wanted y'all to know that. You know. All right. You know, and the other person that was hanging out with me for a long time got banned. So, oh well. Anyway. Anyway. So, gentlemen, you know, today, who is America's real enemy? That's what we're going to be discussing. And before we get deep into that, well, I think, you know, we kind of can put this into it also. What do y'all think about Seattle voting for the approval of $15 minimum wage?
Not good. No, I mean, in theory, it really sounds good, but $15 an hour? Whew, I mean, across the board, do you know how many small businesses that would hurt?
Mm.
Ooh. your other topic, too. I mean, who's the real enemy?
The government. Uh-huh.
The freaking government. The United States of America government, federal government in particular. And Obama got a lot of governors in his pocket, okay? So, to me, the number one enemy, the number one destroyer of America is the federal government. It's been that way for a while.
Wow. Okay. Interesting. You know, I was reading some of the comments about some of the people criticizing it, and a lot of individuals think that, that's a sign of Marxism. Would you agree with that? You know,
what's a sign of Marxism?
Raising the minimum wage, into $15 an hour. You know,
of Marxism in that
it's where we hit
by law.
Yeah,
is dictatorship, but I wouldn't say exactly a sign of Marxism as much as it's a sign. It could be a Marxist agenda. In other words, to implode the nation from within, because a lot of businesses, an economy has to run on its businesses. The economy has to be consumer-oriented. It has to be consumer-driven. A lot of people will disagree. But you have to have money, and you have to have enough businesses that are profitable in order to employ enough people so that the nation as a whole isn't going downhill. Now, if the people who receive $15 an hour, they should be glad, no doubt about it. But let's say in exchange for that, if enough small businesses cannot survive on that $15 an hour, they're going to have to lay off people. So there might be a sharp rise in unemployment for a while.
Can someone that really understands the problem speak?
Beasley?
Okay, wait a minute before you speak. I just want y'all to know that it's supposed to be phased in over a 7-year period, so it's just not going to hop to $15. But okay, go ahead, Beasley.
Apparently, you guys have never heard of inflation.
No.
Okay.
Inflation is the erosion of the purchasing power of your dollar, where it takes more dollars to buy the same goods. Now, inflation is measured by the
CPI.
Bureau of Labor Statistics. They have something called the CPI. And what it does, it measures the incomes for about 80 million Americans.
What it measures is the purchasing power, and it leaves off energy, and it leaves off food.
Don't interrupt me. Hold on. Don't interrupt me.
We're not going to.
Sorry. I'm not bothered. I'm making a joke. I'm in a joke. Okay. But what the CPI does, it measures the incomes of fixed income people, Social Security beneficiaries, military and military, federal, civil service retirees and survivors. And the criterion, the things that they use to determine what calculates inflation, they don't tell you, but they change it. And Joe was right. They leave off. It's important for the government to keep this figure low, because if this inflation figure rises, they have to adjust the money that they give all of these people that receive entitlements, military and federal civil service retirees and their survivors, children on school lunch programs, people that receive Social Security, food stamp recipients. They'd have to give them more money because they have to adjust that for inflation. But what we're entering in is a period of pretty rapid inflation, and where you're seeing it the most is in the price of food. It's really absurd the way that has grown. And you would have – it's real easy to see. I mean, the dollar menu – and a lot of things at the dollar menu, the fast food places that once cost $1.40 now, $1.60, $1.30. Bacon, beef, all of these items. And then they make up stories as to why they're going up. But it's really inflation. It's really a devaluation of the dollar. And when you have a dollar that's decreasing in value, and it's continuously decreased in value. In 1933, a $20 gold piece was worth $20. Even in a gold market that has
come off its highs, a $20 gold piece is now worth about $1,400, just a regular $20 gold piece, when in 1933 it was exchangeable for a $20 bill.
That's also because it was a fixed price, too.
Well, it was a fixed price for a reason.
Okay. Uh-oh.
Because gold and the dollar work together. They're both monetary instruments.
Mm-hmm. So, I mean, with that being said, so
well,
where
with inflation, your dollar buys less, and it's important for wages to go up.
Okay.
I agree that it is important for wages to go up, but to do it by decree, I don't particularly care for it. But I'm glad that I listen to somebody who particularly knows about the problem. Thank you, Beef.
I mean, I understand wages go up, but $15 an hour? I'm sorry.
$15 an hour may seem like a lot.
Yeah.
But when a steak that was once $4.99 a pound is now $8.99 a pound, and a dozen eggs, you know, was once $1.50 for a dozen, or $1.50 for a dozen eggs is now $2.25. When a gallon of gas that was, you know, good grief, gas prices have been high for so long, but just even a fluctuation of a dollar, and you see that often. I remember when gas prices were high in 2007 at $3.50. Now they're a dollar more than that, at least California prices. It's just adjusting the minimum wage for inflation. And these companies are not going to go out of business. All these small businesses are not going to go out of business. They'll just raise their prices as well.
Which will go along with inflation, but a larger number than you might expect will go out of business as a result of $15. $7 to
maybe, maybe not. We'll have to wait and see. Over seven years, the inflation that you're probably going to see. So you have to also understand of how much money has been pumped into hasn't even been pumped into the economy, but just exists.
The fact that it exists won't do anything.
With unlimited QE1, that's quantitative easing, and what that was is the Federal Reserve giving bonds and notes to the banks, to the investment banks, to Goldman Sachs, to Bank of America, to Wells Fargo. They probably even give it to some foreign banks as well.
Well, that's what the currency swap scandal was all about when Bloomberg sued the Federal Reserve. Yeah.
So they take this money, and what they've been taking this money, and what they're probably doing with it is propping up the housing market, okay, and they're also propping up the stock market.
Yeah,
the stock market and equities.
Mm-hmm.
And it's all a big game. It's all a big game where the little people get crushed. So, I mean, anyone that's even focusing on the minimum wage is that it's going to cause, like it's really going to cause a harm for business. I doubt that it's true. Businesses will adjust their prices, and you'll see everything costing more, as you already see anyway. But you'll see things costing a lot more.
Okay.
Having prices always, and we're all adults here. We're all of a man of a certain age. Nothing costs what it did 10 years ago or 20 years ago or 30 years ago.
That's true. That is so true. I can't even argue with that.
Right.
Okay.
So, I mean, all right.
And here's the other thing I was thinking about, too. $15 an hour, and it's being implemented over a seven-year period. So, actually, if you really look at it, that won't be that much by the time the 7 years roll around. Because, as you said, everything had been gone up. You know, and inflation probably would be a little higher also. So then you'd be back in the same boat. It still feel like $7.35, you know, an hour. So I get the point in the lesson, Beasley. Thank you, sir.
Yeah, thank you, Beasley. Great to hear from you.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm not making fun of him. I mean, I'm serious. Thank you, Beasley.
I'm joking with him.
Okay. All right. So we discussed that for a good 10 minutes. Anybody else want to add anything about it before we roll on? You know, because there's a lot of states that actually have minimum wages higher than the national average, you know, for the nation, the national Oh, average is. So I guess it's not. It's not that bad.
Yeah, you know, one thing that stood out to me is that I was listening to a program yesterday, and a guy, I can't quote what he said verbatim, but he said some interesting things. And he talked about the difference in what money, currency affords you versus today versus, I think he went back to 1974. And he made it real simple. He talked about how $5, there was a time when $5 could have bought you plenty of gas, because gas was still under a dollar. You could get a bologna sandwich for a few cents. You could buy, pretty much you could buy everything that you needed for $5. And your way, and the, you know, the minimum wage, I think he said then, was like $5 an hour, something like that. And yet everyone was in a pretty good place financially. Not a perfect place, but pretty good. But he said now, in order to have a similar situation today, you would basically have to have the equivalent of $20+ an hour to be able to afford, you know, the inflation and the prices. So in his theory was that the difference wasn't exactly about so much the minimum wage. It was the cost of living, and the change of the cost of living was the theory that he came with.
Well, I can tell you something about the 50s. I've said this on other shows. In the 50s, you could earn $5,000. With that $5,000, you could afford a wife who didn't have to work, a two-car garage, a house which was a two-car garage, and you'd only pay $248 a year in federal income tax, and you would still have money left over.
Mm.
Okay. So with $5,000, where can anybody live on $5,000 today, much less save money on $5,000?
That's close to my monthly expenses are not that much under that.
Mm.
Right. So, okay. I mean, the greatest enemy, which is the other part of your show, is Congress, because they're controlled by the Federal Reserve. Do you know that the Federal Reserve makes, in my estimation, on average, something like $40 billion a year in profit? And they give back to the Congress, which is part of their charter, a certain percentage of that. Last year, or the year before, they gave back $18 billion. Based upon the interest which they had earned. And the years prior to that, like $19 billion, $14 billion. So they've got Congress in their grip, which is why nobody except Ron Paul, Bunning, another Democrat, and that was about it, ever stood up against the Federal Reserve.
Okay, go ahead. I'm listening.
No, that's it. The Federal Reserve and Congress, they're the enemies. The reason we have inflation isn't because it's a natural phenomenon. It's an artificial phenomenon caused by the Federal Reserve, by pumping more money into the economy, more money than the economy can sustain. If the money was pumped in properly, allowing the GDP to grow properly, you wouldn't have... Well, you'd have a certain amount of inflation to be low, but the wages across the board would go up.
Hmm. Okay.
It's only natural for wages to have to go up.
It's only natural?
Absolutely, it's only natural. You see, this bond buying that the Fed's been doing, it hasn't really been done like this before, this quantitative easing. It's created $116 million an hour for the entire year last year.
Mm-hmm.
So the money supply increases. And the more money that's put into circulation, and they're slowly easing it into circulation.
No, they're not slowly.
They're not easing it into circulation where you and I are handling it. The bankers are handling it. The hedge funds are handling it.
Well, the hedge fund managers, like I said the other day, 25 of them are billionaires. 20 to the top 25 hedge fund managers earn $1 billion a year. Where can anybody earn $1 billion, much less one person, a year? 25. So the QE2 and the QE1 and QE2 you're talking about, they're trying to make us believe that they're doing something for the economy, and by easing it in, they're buying. What is it? What you're reading? Is it 100? Is it 75 billion a year or 60 billion a month? Rather, that they're trying to buy.
They've been putting in $85 billion a year in bonds.
A month.
A month, and they've been doing that for a while.
Yep.
Not to mention all the different quantitative easing. You're going to see huge inflation. You're going to see huge inflation. And you've already seen huge inflation over time. If you could live, if 50 years ago you could live on $5,000 a year and have a comfortable middle class life, that's hard to do now with $50,000 a year.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Huh.
You've had.
All right. But doesn't that go ahead and say that's a part of you know, technological advancement or evolvement of the country?
No. Like I said, it's artificially done. If the Federal Reserve kept its spigots closed, and there's another component too. The population growth is amazing. Back in the 1970s and 50s, we only had like 100 million, 114 million people in the population. Now we have over 300. Okay, huge growth. Okay, and that growth isn't a natural growth. That growth is a lot of people coming in, illegal immigrants and other immigrants. Plus, back in the 50s, 60s, and 70s, you didn't have the type of birth rate that we have now. It's a little bit more than it was back then. But 300 million, okay, especially with people who are functional illiterate, cannot get good jobs. And the jobs that were available at one time, the manufacturing jobs, the blue-collar jobs, were hijacked from our country and sent overseas as a result of government interference, rules and regulations and taxes. So this is not because of a natural evolving. It's artificially done, and it's done to the destruction of America.
Mm-hmm. Destruction.
No, you know, that I don't agree with what he just said. Those jobs were shipped overseas because of the greed of the corporations, not because of government taxes. And if a company's operating here in America, it should help to benefit society and Americans. When your sole mission is just to greed to make as much as you can and not care about the society, then you have what you have, where they would ship over a $17 an hour or $20 an hour manufacturing job and ship it over to where they could pay somebody $1 a day or $2 a day to do the same work. I guess it makes good business, but when you're only thinking about business, society is going to suffer. We just disagreed. That's all right.
Yeah, but it's not. It's part of the reason. Yes, greed is a very important part of.
When you care only about profits and you're not considering the welfare of the whole and the people. You create an unbalanced society, and that's what we have.
But it's not just about greed.
Well, maybe it's not just about greed, but it seems to me that it greed is a part of it.
No, it is.
And profits are a part of it.
Oh, profits are part of the legal structure of the corporation. They have to make profits in order to satisfy the shareholders. It's the legal hold.
But they were still making profits, paying Americans a decent wage, and now all of those jobs have been shipped overseas.
And now even
educated people. I know someone that has an MBA that worked at a company for about 8 or 9 years. He's about 40 years old, and he hasn't been able to find a job in a year.
Yeah, that's true.
And he has to. And when he goes on interviews for jobs he thinks he's about to get, he says he's been on 3, 4, 5, 6 interviews. Can you imagine 6 interviews to get a job? That's how big the pool of unemployed people is.
It takes a greater percentage than that for people to get jobs nowadays. 6 interviews to get a job.
That's crazy.
Obviously, this guy prior to his bad luck now, used to get a job as soon as you walk through the door. I know that particular feeling, okay?
Mm-hmm.
But if it's taken him six interviews now, consider himself lucky.
Wow.
Oh, no, because he's qualified. He's good-looking. He's well-spoken. He has all the tools. He's qualified to do the work. It's just
and
that they have so many people to pick from.
There you go. That's right.
All right. All right, hold on. Let me bring someone in. I think Erica has her hand up. So let
Erica.
Me bring.
Ooh,
yeah,
Erica.
Yeah, Erica.
Oh, okay.
Welcome to the show, Erica. How you doing? Hello, are you there?
Probably on speakers.
Probably. Ow, that was my ear. Are you there, Erica? Going once. Erica,
hello.
Going twice. Oh,
hello.
Well, hello.
Can you hear me?
Yes, we can.
And I was going to make a comment about what both of the gentlemen were saying about the greed and the profit in the government.
Don't ever call me a gentleman.
Well, person.
Okay.
It's a combination of both. Because of the greed, the government put stipulations on the different companies, and because they're greedy, they did send those other jobs to other countries. So it's a combination of both. It's not just because they're greedy and just because of government interference. It was both. But then y'all went on to something else. But that's what I was going to comment on.
All right. So in other words, you agree with what I've said, and you totally disagree with what Beasley said.
Say again?
That's all right. I'm only kidding.
He's playing around.
I didn't hear what you said.
No, I said... I was joking. I said, you totally agreed with what I said and totally disagreed with what Beasley said, but that wouldn't be the case because you
right.
said it was a combination of both. So
right. Oh, okay. I just didn't hear you. Okay. I guess you're just trying to aggravate him. Go right ahead.
That's all. Yeah.
That's all they do is try to aggravate me.
Oh, that's all they do. Not you, Beasley. You would never do that.
That's, it's BTR against Beasley. It's been like that for a while.
Oh, okay. But yet you still call in.
I'm the victim here. I'm a masochist. I like getting abused.
All right. Let's get off Beasley. All right. He's been paid for videos again. We ain't trying to have that. Okay, so ladies and gentlemen, let's get on with the main topic, okay? I think this was a good lead-in to it, and that is, who is America's real enemy? Now, of course, I know it said Iraq, Al-Qaeda, the Muslim Brotherhood, so forth and so on. You know, we're made to believe that those are the true enemies of this country. However, I say there's another enemy that everyone seems to look over because it's right there in our face. And that's all I'm saying right now. So, before I let y'all go, we got another caller with their hand up, and we're going to discuss this thing, all right? So, hey, there's no rush, because we probably going to have a part two tomorrow. So, here it is. So, let this other caller in first. All right, 111, welcome to the show. How are you?
Hello.
Hello, Mace. How are you today?
I'm just fine.
Great.
Hey, Mace.
Great.
Yes. When I hear people,
how you doing, Mace?
Hello. When I hear people discussing the minimum wage, but then you look at the people that's trying to get cheap labor. Which one is it? Should they pay the American people? Because what you get from there, where they get the cheap labor, you got to pay a big buck for it when it gets back over here. So who's losing out? Big business or the people that should be doing the job over here in the first place?
The people that should be doing the job here.
I thought so. So what's wrong with $15 an hour? You're gonna go buy a loaf of bread. You're gonna get your gas for $7 a gallon. Then you can get some eggs for almost $7. So
right.
In a day, your work is gone for $7 an hour for everything you had to do. It take one day, and everything you had to purchase, you don't even have any money.
And all you can eat is an egg sandwich.
Yes. So that doesn't go together. So when I hear these economists, it's not a fact. And then Zach, when you hear.
I think I covered that already when I said if you really look at it over the 7-year period they're talking about implementing this thing, you know, it's not a lot of money. You know,
not
it just seems like a lot now, but you know, even though it may seem like a lot now, compared to 7 years from now, yeah, it's not going to be anything. It'll be like back being at 725 again, 735 again. So, you know, you just have to look at it that way. But that's a good point, man.
Yeah, but the seven-year period is for Washington State. It ain't federal.
Right.
They get 10-10 now.
Right.
As of today, they get 10-10 now. But Washington State saying later they should do it now. What later going to do? And everybody's solved in this country.
Well,
some people pay $20-something an hour today. And then you come companies going to lay people off and close down their business. They're not going to lay nobody off because people are already paying it. But what about those people? Do they ever look at them? Were they paying $16 and $17, $20-something an hour now? And their companies are rolling real nice.
But they're paying that for skilled labor. They're not paying that for entry-level jobs.
Right,
They're paying that for skilled labor.
But they're still being paid. I mean, they're not having any problems.
But a skilled laborer, someone to know, for instance, if not to talk about my situation, but if a skilled laborer does more to improve your bottom line. There's more things that he can do than someone that's a entry level worker. People are paid, you know, not that the wages are fair these days, but people are paid based on their ability.
Sound like they pay cheap wages, just like they want to get people over here from Mexico to come over here and pick vegetables and fruit for nothing.
Oh, Lord. Nah.
But you got to pay an arm and a leg to get it.
Even they're having a hard time. They say that there's more people going back to Mexico. Life's gotten too hard here.
Mm-hmm.
There's not the influx of immigrants as there once was. But the enemy, the real enemy is the people that control the currency and dictate economic policy. And that's the bankers. That's the real shadow government. That's the true enemy. That's the one that makes everybody dance. And everybody dances to their tune. And they do it worldwide. And they manipulate. Then they manipulate and control governments.
And that's why things were messed up.
I mean, look what happened in 2008. The whole financial system, the investment banks, and everybody that was related were making huge profits on selling mortgage-backed securities, which were selling securities that were based on the value of U.S. homes. And home values were going up for a good 6-7 year period, going up astronomically, real high. And they were profiting off of it immensely. And then when it starts to go bad, then they take losses and they have to appeal to the government for help. So their profits are private. But when they have losses, huge losses, it's on the back of the public. That's just not things just shouldn't work that way.
No, it shouldn't.
So it's the bankers that are the ultimate enemy to everyone worldwide. It's the bankers and monetary policy that caused the people to riot in the streets all over the place. In Spain and Greece and everywhere that there's problems, it's usually monetary problems.
Very interesting. Before we go any further, let me bring Les Jackson in, and then my co-host Akeem, he has some things he want to put out there for y'all. So let me bring Mr. Les in. Cousin, are you there?
I am here. Good afternoon. Great show. I like the way it's the flow is sitting back. I think everybody is right, but, you know, you hit on something earlier. And you wouldn't come out and say it, but I'm going to come out and say it. The worst enemy we have in America is us.
Mm.
We have stopped living. We stopped dreaming. We just want to survive. And when you're in survival mode, you're not going to prosper because all you're doing is selling for just making it. And I'm glad that they raised this thing to $15 an hour because what poor man do you know? What family do you know on $10 an hour on the West Coast can truly raise a mother, a father, and maybe one or two children? I mean, we got to quit f- fooling ourselves with these falsehoods that, you know, just because they raised it to $15 is wrong. That's a good thing. It should have been done. I think that every time the cost of living go up, they ought to kick up your paycheck 25 or 30 cents. If they would have done it that way, we wouldn't be having this discussion right now. But going back to what I originally said, the biggest enemy is us, because we fail to want to be all that we can be. We fail to sit back and live that dream that some people are willing to take that risk, and they get into the comfort zone. Do we realize that there are more millionaires created and have been created year after year, and it has not went down for the last 15, 20, 30 years? So you can make it, but you got to want to make it. And a lot of us just don't want to make it. We're so busy blaming other stuff to where we just don't want to make it. We see this stuff, it ain't like we ain't being warned. It's not like we wasn't taught. But if you settle for second best, what you going to get? Maybe third. And we have to start looking at it for what it really is. That's all I'm going to say.
No, come on, Les. You know you got more than that.
I'll come back after the next segment. Because, you know, I always keep something to say. Always keep something to say. But, you know, we won't put it all out there right now, but we will put it out there.
Well, and Cloud wanted to say something, right?
Oh, yeah. I was just going to kind of reiterate what I was talking about yesterday, which fits with today. And I was basically going to talk again about the war of ideas. And I think that, you know, everything that we see manifesting itself, whether it's in the Fed or in Congress, in various areas, sometimes we overlook the war of ideas. You know, there's been capitalism, and there's been communism, and there's been democracy and republics, and there are so many ideas swimming throughout the world, throughout the universe. And you look at going way back to the Greeks, as I talked about that last time, and how they were spearheads when it came to recording history. They obviously they weren't the only ones, but they were big on recording their ideas with the so-called philosophers, using that word, combining the words philo, meaning love, and sopher, meaning to think. And in using that, Aristotle, Plato, Socrates, they had this idea, the grand idea of creating this idea for corporate control, you know. And today we call it leadership. And so the Greeks were also the ones who documented their principles on how to manipulate the masses, which we see with NSA, CIA, FBI, and so on. And, you know, Plato also studied, when you study his writings, he talks about the chief citizen. For example, you know, the word he created for it was called Policio, that is where we get the word politics. And this idea was discussed and debated constantly by Plato and Aristotle. They were called, at the time, master teachers. You know, we use the word Rabboni or rabbi. You hear it in religious discussions with the Jewish community. And that originally was used to describe anyone who mastered an area of knowledge. And now the Greeks, we know, also came up. The Greeks also came up with something called I don't know what that is. I can't hear somebody in the background.
Yeah.
Yeah, but I was going to say that the Greeks also, they came up with the idea, we were talking about that yesterday, of demokrata, which is democracy, which was invented by the Greeks. And democracy was born out of what we call today humanism. You know, they believe that the human is God and can create gods with an S. So the Greeks had gods for everything, but they made their gods human. And we know that democracy was built on supremacy of human humans, not God. I'm not trying to be religious or anything like that. I'm just trying to point out some of the stuff that fit their ideology. So we know citizen is a Greek concept, and it means ultimate power. And they believe that in order to maintain order, one must keep it. They believed in choosing one like themselves, also known as the chief citizen, the policio, the politician. And they believe that there is no God in the Greek idea. So in this system, there is no deciding reference or standard besides popular vote. And so we know today, if we look at, economies collapsing, one of the first country to collapse, to go broke, and to severely be impacted by mass joblessness was just so happened to be Greece, which is one of the poorest economies in Europe currently. So we know that the Greek Empire became a culture, and we talked about their cultural immorality, bestiality, homosexuality, orgies, murder, adultery, idolatry, sexual perversion, everything from one of the popular discussions sometimes that we've heard about is pedestry, I think that's called pedestry, I don't know how to pronounce it, but it deals with the popularization of what people call pedophilia and homosexuality, and where it was not considered, it was a combination of the two. So it wasn't considered wrong or immoral in that particular culture. They popularized this thing, and it was even popular in certain social surroundings. So that brings us to the current state, and we think about all these ideas that divide us, you know, that keep us from pursuing common goals. And in my opinion, it seems to always go back to ideas, to what ideas are barriers that are keeping people separate from fighting the real enemies, but, you know, and keeping them content with oppression, content with suppression, content with the same old government status quo stuff. We become numbing to so many things, and we accept so many things, and it's this dumbing down effect. It's this war of ideas that can be easily overlooked, because you talk about it every time you talk about the media and you talk about Congress and you talk about laws and how certain policies are used to separate and take away our civic liberties, and they use fear factors. I mean, look at 9/11. Oh yeah, we're gonna keep you secure. And some of the things we don't look at is all the documentation that we have to do certain things that in the past we looked at as freedom. I have to have a passport to leave my country. I can't, and if I go to another country, that country can keep me in that country if I don't have a passport. I have to have this government's ID. I need their license in order to drive in certain places. I have to have a social security card. I have to have a variety of different types of documentation. And in any event that someone wanted to rise against a government, and I'm not authorizing to do that. But let's say you did want to revoke and you wanted to start something different. In the system that's created now, stuff like globalization, it'd be very hard for you to rise up and move outside of the confines of the systems in place, because you're dependent on that, on their passport. You depend on their IDs. You depend on their Social Security card. So you have all these things, these ideas that can confine us in many ways. I'm not saying that they're the end all or be all problem, but I'm just saying that there's a war of ideas, basically. I know I say it a lot, so I'm going to sit back.
Well, any comments to that?
Well, the reason we have those things is because different countries have different laws.
Well, thank you, Mace.
And that's it.
That's the way I see it.
That's the way you see it? So, Maze, in your eyes, then, since that's the way you see that, who do you think is America's biggest enemy and why?
Who I think America's biggest is the greed, the people that want to hog up everything and control everything and tell other people how to manage everything. Those crazy people that come up with stuff that it makes no sense. That's America's biggest problem.
Bankers. She just described the bankers.
Well, let me hear from Maze. Who are
bankers and some business people too?
Okay.
Because if they end with the bankers, like Flint, that stop other people from getting where they want to go.
Right.
So all of these, like the Heritage Foundations and all those foundations, they're part of the problem too with America.
Mm-hmm.
Because we didn't send them nowhere. They came and formed a club and to tell America how they're supposed to run. Half of them probably don't even have citizenship. They have citizenship to this country, but they have citizenship in other countries too.
Right. They're globalists.
So that's why you don't care about this one.
That's...
You're more concerned about going around everywhere else, but this country you don't really care about either.
They don't.
Like Rahm Emanuel, or like when a lot of Bush.
Too many of them in high places.
A lot of Bush's advisors had dual citizenship with Israel.
Valerie,
Joe, whenever I can jump back in here, you let me know.
Okay, I guess you have the floor.
I guess I can jump back in here now. Let me jump in here and see, we forget. See, we get delusional, and I'm going to say it just like that. We get delusional on all of the outside forces, but nobody has control over your destiny but you. I don't blame people for sitting back. If you can make $100 million, if you can get it, go get it. If that's meant for you, you're going to have it. We tend to ignore and get caught up in what mainstream media has taught us. See, it's telling you to be poor. Mainstream media is telling you you can't go ahead. You can't get ahead. All you got to do is be a regular worker, keep on being that field Negro or that field woman that's out there, and you're going to continue to do it because it gets embedded in you, that word embed. And that's what we've been indoctrinated. To sit back and not strive for the prosperity that we were all intended to have in the first place. And we're losing sight of what we're actually here for. This is your world. Be what you want to be. That's all I'm going to say for right now.
Can I speak? If everybody was like Donald Trump and they think he's a rich man, all he does is use his name. He has no money. He can file bankruptcy 27 times and still be look like a rich man. So can somebody give me an answer to that?
He has money. He didn't declare personal bankruptcy. One of his businesses declared bankruptcy. He has plenty of money, but he does use his name. But he's not without assets.
Mm-hmm. Well,
he's not.
Let me put this out there because I understand. But here's my take on this thing. All right, when it comes to America's biggest enemy and. My cousin put it out there. Yes, it's America. We are our own biggest enemy. And this is why I see we are. And number one is because America has a tendency to go out and attempt to force their beliefs on other people. You know, it doesn't matter. It doesn't matter where the other countries are living happily. You know, everything is going. We decide, okay, we need to go here, and we need to change the way they are living because we're really not happy with that. But however, here, right here in this country, you know, there's individuals, you know, that. Is not living the so-called American dream or just, you understand what I'm saying? We are Who's behind those actions?
Yeah.
Okay. Who, the bankers? You going to say the bankers? Or you going to say the
economists? I'm asking what you're saying. We know I can connect the dots.
Mm-hmm.
But who do you think is behind those actions? I mean, that's the government, that's the military, but who moves them?
Well, they say the president moves them.
Well, how do you get to be president?
Well, Oh, so now you're saying the people do elections.
No,
that's,
not the people at all. They select a couple of candidates. They raise a shitload of money. And they let the best man win. It's money that rules all of this stuff that makes it all, that makes all of what you're talking about happen. It's the bankers, the banks which have equity in the corporations that profit from war. It's corporate interests that are being protected when United States troops are going all over the place. It's definitely corporate interests and oil company interests that are being protected when we went into the Gulf War in 91, when they wanted to stop, when they wanted to kick Saddam out of Kuwait after he invaded Kuwait. It was definitely corporate oil interests and military industrial complex interests, people that make arms and that make all of the products that go along with war and troops and sending troops abroad, everything from gas to boots to vests to cartons of milk.
And that's how corporations became people.
Right. Well, I don't know if that's how corporations became people. But corporations profit off of that. They went all the way around.
Okay, hold on. Wait a minute. All right, because I was playing here, but I'm going to go ahead and quit playing. All right.
Get that shotgun ready.
But look, here it is, man. Here it is. You know, and this is another reason why I say that we're our own enemies, because we, 9 times out of 10, we're the one who put these guys and help these guys be put in power. Okay, we are the ones. Now, you know, once we're not happy with how they're performing, we have to go over there and get them out. Now, but you come back here, we're not happy with the way Congress is performing. But, however, it's very interesting because you just can't go and drag them out and say, this is the way it's going to be. You're supposedly have the right to place your vote to have the right individual put in. However, we all know that votes don't really count for nothing, because the good old boys stay in. As long as they got the money flowing, they're in. So, you know, I just wanted to put that out there. But let me bring Lo in, because he's been waiting patiently. I'm bring him in, and y'all could continue the conversation. All right, Mr. Lo, welcome to the show, sir. How are you?
Shalom, Lo.
Okay, he must have himself muted.
Oh, can you keep him on here?
Oh, wow. Oh, yeah. Since we were talking about the corporation portion, I will say, I think that in general, we know that corporations do have influence on government through things like campaign contributions, through lobbying, and through captured regulatory agencies. And we know that although this is not always emphasized in American government text, this influence is certainly a common theme in many political discussions. Campaign funding, for example, is definitely one of the mechanisms which corporations use to influence government with campaign funding. Campaigns for federal office have been, very, very expensive. We know the national campaigns came to be more and more expensive as the country expanded. If you look way back to the first political campaign involving a large amount of corporate contributions was that of William McKinley in 1896. And as a result of the way his campaign was run, large amounts of corporation donations were made. After that, there were attempts to clean up political campaigning. For example, Teddy Roosevelt ran a clean government president campaign. But under the influence of early reformers and in the following decades, various laws were passed on campaign financing. We look at Federal Corrupt Practices Act of 1925, which limited both campaign contributions and campaign spending. Then we look at the Federal Elections Campaign Act. In 1971, the Federal Elections Campaign Act was passed banning corporate campaign contributions. That was followed by the Watergate scandal. As a result, we know that that scandal, major amendments to the act were passed in 1974, and we know that whether one considers the major act as that of 1971 or 1974 is not important. However, the major amendments of 1974 were clearly a result of Watergate, and we know that most people today don't know that what Watergate was really about. I mean, basically, it was Nixon's attempt to use underhanded methods, or you could say dirty tricks, to influence the politics of the Democratic Party so that their weakest candidate would be nominated to oppose him. We know he did succeed in accomplishing this in the election of 1972. So Watergate was really a crime against democracy in a sense. You know, in that endeavor, we know Nixon's people got many corporations to contribute to his campaign organization, which was called the Committee to Reelect the President, or CREEP, an appropriate acronym indeed. But lastly, I'll say this for now, is that the 1974 amendment tried to limit campaign contributions and campaign spending, but it also set up the Federal Elections Commission, the FEC, to enforce the Federal Elections Campaign Act. And this was very important because it was the first time an enforcement mechanism had been established in connection with the campaign finance law. Now, although the Federal Corrupt Practice Act of 1924 had continued very strong provisions, they were never enforced. You know, the 1974 Act was thus a very significant step, in my opinion, toward finance reform when it was first passed.
Wow. That, you know what? That, you know, all that says is come. It just comes all back to the money. Then, you know, no matter how you look at it, it comes back to the money.
And what is it, Eric? Eric, one of the great passages of scripture, and in some of the greatest books of wisdom, it says money is a defense, just like power is a defense. And we have to start recognizing that it is about the money. Communities. If we don't start looking at our communities and start looking at ourselves and what we're doing, and that's why I say it's about us, we're the worst enemy. You know, I'm not going to blame it on the government, because the government was never meant to take care of me. I have enough sense to understand that's not true. That's some ideology that the Pilgrims or somebody else made up, and I don't care who made it up, because I know that's not dictating my terms. Until we learn to dictate our own terms,
right,
we are going to continue to fall victim to government, to corporations. We're going to fall victim to all of these outside circumstances, which if you really look in your neighborhood, how much effect really has corporations and everything else had on it? The immediate and the strong impact. How much of it was our fault because we didn't stand up for something, and how much was actually because of some outside force came into your neighborhood and took it over?
You know what? That's a very good point. And, you know, when you mentioned that, I thought about that. You know, you're right, because we have let corporations come in and, you know, buy up property and put all these big businesses in the area, and we're not getting anything out of it. Nothing, you know, because why? It's all about the money, you know.
And I'm going to say this, Eric, I don't want to stop you. And you know what? And it's because the people in the community don't put in the demands. See, they'll come in. If you watch, if you notice, when a company comes into your neighborhood, they only come in because they say they feel sorry and they want to do good by the downtrodden people. But really, if the downtrodden people, if the 99% would really stand up, and I mean please stand up, then we could change a whole bunch. Could you imagine what would happen? A lot of people don't realize what happened when Rosa Parks got off that bus.
Nothing.
It was 389 days before people got back on the bus. A year. See, we don't tell that story. It wasn't about getting on the back of the bus. It was the 89 days that they sat back and they crippled an economy.
Mm-hmm.
So with a 99% please stand up. Will y'all please stand up and quit complaining about it? Let's get out of here and change it.
Mr. Tuck.
Yeah, I want to hop in there, too.
If that was so simple, why do Native Americans always have problems and this is their land? They got problems like when they wanted to build those pipelines going through their property and still fighting over it. It's not about the money. It's about the people with the power that want to change something that don't belong to them in the first place.
I'm going to hop in there, too.
All right, go ahead.
I was just going to say, in the 360 years between 1500 and the end of the slave trade in the 1860s, at least 12 million Africans were forcibly taken to the Americas. These are things we know. Then, known as the New World to European settlers. We know that the largest forced migration in human history relocated some 50 ethnic and linguistic groups. We know that only a small portion of the enslaved, less than 500,000, were sent to North America. We know that the majority went to South America and the Caribbean. We know that in the mid-1600s, Africans outnumbered Europeans in nascent cities such as Mexico City, Havana, and Lima, which is in Peru. We know that a terrible trade, the transatlantic trade, as it was called, it was a triangular trade, for its three-legged route that began and ended in Europe. We know that European vessels took goods to Africa and basically exchanged for the slaves. We know that the ships then sailed to the Americas to trade slaves for agricultural products extracted by slave labor, which was sold in Europe after return journey. So we know about the Middle Passage. And we look at some of the infrastructure that we built way before we started this influx of black intellectualism and academics that we see today, because it's a plethora of those. But we know that when we did have the movements where we had co-ops, where we had women's groups and other organizations come together so that we can empower ourselves, we know that what happened to Black Wall Street when we built infrastructure and then somebody came and bombed our stuff, acts of terrorism on the black community, destroyed our household. Why? Because our corporations, our companies, our small businesses were so grand, so robust, so successful that even those from other communities, including the Anglo-Saxon community, had to come to us for products. And then the propaganda of a woman being whistled at by another black man led to is assumed that that's what led to the bombing of Oklahoma, of Tulsa. We know better than that. We know that that was a successful, thriving economy. It was self-sufficient. It was self-sustaining. We know that when the Black Panther Party arisen, they became targets. They became considered terrorists. They became hunted down. They were shot. They were killed. They were made examples by the various public institutions, the government institutions sanctioned by other corporations. We know about forced migration. We know about things like the Underground Railroad. We know about these the different things, schools and educational systems and different infrastructure that was built on our backs and that we built for ourselves. We know that Honest Abe didn't come to our defense, but it was a group of slaves who said to them, look, if you guys want to win this war, you got to free black folks. So this is the deal. You get us, you let us come to your country, you give us the opportunity to be free, and then you'll outnumber the other guys, and then people will run to your country and turn on their peers, their slave owners, and then you'll have the upper hand. So we know that there's a history of a conflict between, you know, it's a conflict of economic interest. You know, every time somebody wanted to profit and to build their infrastructure and to build their economy, it meant bad. It meant trouble. The trouble for the indigenous people, trouble for the African slaves. So I'm only saying all that to say that we keep seeing traces of money and land grab and all these things that come back to infrastructure and come back to finance and come back to economics when we talk about some of the chaos that started, you know, in the beginning and is still occurring today. I know that was long-winded. I'm sorry, but I just wanted to put that out there.
And, you know, I want to say he is absolutely correct, but something I do want to add to it. What we fail to recognize, not all blacks that came over on them boats ended up being slaves. There were a lot of them that went free by breaking away and had ideologies that told them and taught them who they were and where they were from. And there were a lot of black successful people during the slavery era. We don't talk about them because they're not talked about. Like I said, we deal so much on the negativity to where we stop seeing the positivity. We know America is built on money. That's what makes us the land of opportunity. That's why people are dying to get here now, because other cultures see that if you get to America, you can sit back and you can take a bowl of rice and open up a restaurant in 5 to 20 days.
And they
if
can
you
do it
sit
without...
back and you got an idea, you can sit back and you can do whatever you want here in America, because nobody stands up for themselves. And when they freed us, they only freed us because, and remember, they only freed us because of the pressure. But we're in a global economy now, and we have the Internet. People don't even have to see your face. They don't have to know if you're black or white. We are kicking out more millionaires and billionaires that are from 20 years old to 30 than in the whole history of the global economy. And they're making it all over the world. These young people have got a message. They're telling us, forget all this stuff about the race stuff and all of this. Start concentrating on what's really happening. If we know that money is the problem, we need to be going after the money. I'm like, my man, show me the money. That's what I'm gonna say.
Well, you do a lot of talking, and it was a lot of it, the things you say is for nothing, man. How in the hell? What? A lot of money. Give you the money. Yes, give me the money. Yes.
Show me the money.
Yeah. And let me ask you a question. How much money would you accept to put on a dress? You personally. I know you do it, but I'm asking how much.
How much money would I do what?
Accept to put on a dress.
There he go with that foolishness already.
Put this out there. Here's something I just did, and I invite everybody to do it. I just hooked up with a company. Won't cost you a dime. And the whole source of this company is to sit back and to show companies where they're being ripped off on their utility bills. Don't cost you a dime. Don't cost them a dime unless they recover. And you get a good commission. Now, when I run this idea around our folks, black folks, everybody come up with a reason why they can't do it. Well, it ain't costing you a dime. It may cost you a little time, but you don't even have to work at it on a 40-hour basis. And it's your company.
Mm.
It ain't costing the people that you go ask a dime. If we don't collect, you don't get anything back. But we can't see where the profit is in that, and we can't see further the forest for the trees.
Mm.
And some of them in the trees still can't see the forest, and they think the forest is going great. But still, what they have to do with what's wrong with America?
It has a lot to do with it, because our mentality.
Because a lot of people,
we play ourselves cheap.
A lot of people in America have worked, paid their taxes, and they deserve what they get at the end when they've done their deed. And they're getting mistreated from it.
But you know what? Let me ask you this.
Some people ain't looking for nothing. They're just looking at the crooks that's here.
Hold on for a minute.
They can dwell and see them.
Hold on. So, Maze, you say they deserve what they get?
I'm saying after they worked their hard labor and they've done their deeds and they paid their taxes and whatever they need to get at the end of it, they deserve it. And then you got crooks walking around here with crooked schemes and scams, and people welded in, and some of them lost everything they had and got to rebuild back up. Sometimes you have to watch. And listen,
I don't,
and look,
I'm
follow
sorry.
Everything and everybody.
I don't agree with this. They find the modest-looking older white man to roll out this reverse mortgage thing. It's a scam behind that. I don't agree with it. And ultimately, hey, you know what? They'll let those people stay in their houses. But I guarantee you, when they die off, something's gonna come behind that. You know?
It is something behind it.
Right. I don't know much about it because it doesn't pertain to me. But the thing is this. Now, if you've done everything that Ms. Mays has said, then you shouldn't have to basically give your home away to any damn body. You know, you shouldn't have to give your home away to pay off all these bills that they're going to dump on you because the food is not healthy. And you're going to get sick, and they know you're going to get sick, and you're going to have to go to the doctor. And you're going to get these $100,000 doctor bills or even better. And they know these things. So you come in debt and you die. You're indebted and you die in debt.
So who do you think the biggest enemy of the people?
I think America is its own worst enemy. The American way, quote unquote, is its own worst enemy. Just I was listening to the person earlier talk about, oh yeah, you get all this money, and tomorrow the people that have the power say, hey, the economy is terrible. All the money you have is worthless. You can burn all that money then. They tell you you need trees other than money, and you'll go out and try to find all the trees that you can for them to turn it into something else. So you're going to get all that money. And people have the right to fluctuate the market at will. So I don't think money is the answer to everything. I think resources, natural resources, should be the answer to different things. You know, even if it come down to me having to trade you for something. You know, I think that'll go a lot farther than stockpiling a bunch of paper that everybody on this show has already said is worthless anyway. That's just me. And, you know, aside from all that, you can go get all the money.
So you'd rather have a barter economy than money?
Some people do.
When I hear people talk like that, and it's almost like they're talking about going backwards, like they want to have their own farm. And I can understand having that in case of emergency. But there's people that really talk that they would prefer that lifestyle. And maybe that lifestyle is better for some folks. But I'm a city guy, and I'm not about to go rototill no fields and grow corn. And I'm just not going to do all that. Now, it'd be good to know how to do it if I really, really, really had to. I'm just banking on that I won't have to.
Uh-huh. And you'll eat any and everything they shove in front of you. They tell you it's not healthy at all.
And you're that much better than me, and not part of the same system that I am. Except I'm just doing it up here in California. You're doing it down there in low Louisiana.
Actually,
there's no difference. We're all caught up in the same game, bro.
Don't act like
you're not here in America with the rest of us. All of those things that you're saying, and some of them have some validity. But it's overall that you're just unhappy here. It's all screwed up, and that's the way you see this all screwed up. And that's just, you know, so you're not going to even enjoy the short time that you're here with that attitude.
My happiness is coming. To hell with this place. I want them to do everything that they're doing. My happiness is coming.
Now that right there, my friend, might be the biggest lie of all.
Well, that's to you. You can. Hey,
it
bro,
might die, and it, you might right, die, and this right, just might right, be over. Right. You say now hold what? On. They go, it's hold over.
Hold on. Dang it, we getting off topic here. Y'all two, you know, y'all love each other anyway. Y'all need to go to the green room.
Absolutely.
Okay.
We don't need
to go to the green room.
Right.
Me and him ain't never been to the green. Oh yeah, we have.
Yes, we have. Yes, we have.
All right, so let me bring this caller in right here. Let y'all calm down a little bit. Y'all going beyond crazy now. All right, 314, welcome to the show. Who do I have here?
What's the topic today, Eric?
Michael.
Hey, Joe.
Hey, Benny.
Come on, Bianchi. What it is. What
hey, how you doing, Bianchi?
Hello.
Hello, Bianchi.
I ain't speaking to you. He come in here. Hey, Joe.
I said hello.
That was
Joe hello.
Anyway, the topic of the show is who is America's real enemy? That is the topic.
America's real enemy is America's government.
Why would you say that?
Because the policies that it play out creates burdens on Americans. Like, for instance, the $15 an hour minimum wage that I forget which state has made that law. And at the same time, Washington State, at the same time, you hear where the EPA is imposing clean air regulation on powerhouses, which is going to, in essence, raise up electric bills. So it's going to eat that $15 an hour up.
There you go.
I told my cousin earlier today, the mind of those people are very deep. They're not going to do something for nothing. Never.
Let me ask you a question.
Ask me a question.
Is it possible for any black person in America to make more than $100,000 if you wanted to?
I can't hear you.
Of course.
They do, Joe. They do. They make $100,000. Some of them make more.
Am I asking you, Mays?
You didn't ask me.
Absolutely.
I'm just telling you.
I'm asking Lo for a reason because we all know Lo's attitude. So I'm asking him. Like, I know everybody else's answer, but I'm asking Lo. Do you think a black person in America today can make $100,000 if he applied himself, worked hard, et cetera?
I'm sure he or she could, Joe.
Okay.
Got to apply himself.
Some make that much in retirement.
Thank you, Bianchi.
Well, if that's possible, then why do you always have this negative attitude about he can't make it?
That's not what he's saying.
Because he ain't getting $100,000 a year.
Actually,
Beasley, I have a great career. I said this before, and I said also.
I didn't say you didn't have a great career.
So you don't know how much money I make a year. I've said before, you and I can post pics on Mr. Talk's Facebook page, and I'll shut you down, partner. So go on while you're talking. You don't know me like that, bro.
All right. Hold on.
It doesn't have to be personal.
Once again, they just love. I just want you to note
that I'm not responding to his testosterone. Okay. I'm taking a deep breath.
All right.
I'm capable of it, but I'm going to restrain myself. Okay.
All right. Let me bring Michael in.
Oh, boy.
And Michael, congratulations on your son. I'm graduating. Let me give him some applause for that because, we should always celebrate when our kids.
Yeah, we do that, though.
All right. So there you go, Michael. You have the floor.
Michael,
how you doing?
Today?
I've been listening to.
Hey, how you doing, Mike?
Hey, how you doing, everyone?
Congratulations,
Joe, shut
Michael.
Up.
And congratulations.
Hey, how you doing, Mace?
Congrats,
Joe, shut up
Mike.
Is about what's the worst thing about America. I'm getting into it. But about $100,000 a year job, Joe, you're right. That's achievable. That's achievable. But abundantly in the black community, it's not going to be abundant because that person, nine times out of ten, that black person that's making $100,000 a year, how many people or white people in that building he's working with? And look at the percentage. And so we still have to fight. Now, I'm just saying being mindful. I would never tell no one to be ambitious. I would never tell my sons to be bad. But sometimes you have to be mindful, and this is what we're talking about. Now, I want to say something. The worst enemy is people who say they don't believe in the voting system, people who talk politics day after day after day after day. And they don't believe in the voting system. It's rigged. They don't vote. They do not try to let other people hear their voice. Now, democracy is not the best thing. There is no governance or any laws or procedures that's written in history that has given mankind total comfort, total peace. So the Constitution, excluding the three-fifths clause, it's a good thing. I think it's a political science, whereas though all powers has to have a the check and balance with the three branches of government. Now, is it perfect? No. Democracy, is it perfect? No. But I would rather live in a democracy where you can vote and get the consciousness of the people in voting in numbers than having a dictatorship like they did in Egypt. Seven-year-old kids had to go into priesthood, and then they kept the education from the other ones, just like Plato and them. So those societies, I think, a mixture of all that, because all of their ancient governing systems aren't bad. You know, all of them, you know, have some good things and bad things, just about this, or just like this government, good things and bad things. But when the people say we don't have the power, the corporations run everything, when they have that rhetoric, it would never change. The people have the power. That's what that's what the whole structure was made up for. So you have to have that mindset. When people do not have that mindset, America, we are our own worst enemy. Look at when Obama was going to strike Syria. American people did not want him to strike. Said we don't want no boots on the ground. It might blow up into a chaos war. They were emailing their senators. So they stopped it. That's one way we can get in conscience. But you have certain people that just don't believe in the political system. And you know, they don't believe it. So if you don't believe in it, if you don't believe in voting,
I want to go.
And if you don't believe in, they're not going to be our leaders, and they should be spokespersons and representatives. If you don't believe that you have spending power, that you can shut these corporations down. If you don't believe that the whole thing about our lives is challenging to each other's concepts, because our concepts is going to be written in law, and another branch is going to enforce that law and interpret that law to you, and we all control each other. That's just a fact. So the consciousness has to be up. But when you have these people not being political, yeah, we're our own worst enemy.
All right, are you finished, Mike?
Exactly, I'm finished for now.
Right. So, so basically,
hold on,
people...
Beasley. I said I was going after Mike.
Go ahead.
Yeah.
Okay,
go for
Mike. First off, I want to say congratulations on your boy graduating.
Fine.
And I also want you to note that. Since you told me to shut up, and I haven't ripped you a new asshole as I would have about a year ago when you first came on the show. I just want you to know that. I've evolved.
Really?
Well, Joe, I told you to shut up because you assumed that I did not know the topic of the show. Go ahead, Beasley.
Go ahead, Beasley.
Hold on. Wait a minute. Excuse me. This is my show, Michael. Thank you.
Well, I'm sorry, Mr. Talk. I'm sorry.
Thank you.
I'm
now,
finished.
go get your point, Joe. Get your point.
Finished.
That's it?
That's it.
Okay. Go ahead, Michael. I mean, Beasley.
Oh, I'm good, too. I've done this too many times.
All right.
I'll pass.
So, Michael, stating that we're our own enemies, I'm just trying to roll what you said through my head real fast, because you said a lot. But, however, I think when you say we're our own enemy, can you break that down as to why? Is it because we have individuals that won't vote or do not believe in the political system that is in place? Or is it because we just have differences and no one can come together with that?
No. No, some people think we don't have the power. When people dialogue and say the corporations has all the power, the government has all the power, no, the people have the power. The people control the government, and the people control the industries and the corporations. If you say that, because people always talk, if you say we can't do nothing, they run it, well, why dialogue about it? Just say they do whatever they want, we can't stop them. There's no reason to sit and have a discussion on what we can do to try to stop it. The people have the power, because those people are not aliens. They're just like me and you. They go to the bathroom. They, you know, it is what it is. They're not leaders. They're representatives. They're not leaders.
Let me ask you a question.
In the Constitution, it has no leaders in it. It has representatives and spokespersons.
Let me ask you a question.
Okay.
It's very simple. Yes or no? When you get to the elevator, just like the reporter person did, and the senator said, hey, you can't come on here. Then the reporter person said, oh, okay. Well, and they still tried to ask a question, and the door is closed, and basically said, get the hell away from me. What was the reporter supposed to do then?
but accepting defeat?
Mike, well, I don't know. Well, I don't know. That may be something private, but I'll give you an example here, and we're going to change here. When you go to a city council hall meeting to talk to the mayor and the board of all the board members and the city council for a town hall meeting, in Baltimore, they say that you cannot ask the mayor or no one a question for your 3 minutes or your 5 minutes. They just say you can only say something. No, we need to change that. So it's ours as citizens to put a petition for the next time that says that the citizens have a right to make their comments, and their comments can be a question or, you know, I'm sorry, or just a comment. But they don't want to ask questions to the citizens. So I agree, if that's so, the citizens need to change it, because we can put petitions up on any ballot. The citizens have the power to change any law right now, factually on a petition. So when
Mike,
we cry and whine, when
Mike,
we cry and whine, that ain't right. I mean,
Mike,
just look at California. Look how many things they put on the ballot and got the laws changed. And guess what? The politicians couldn't do nothing because we put something in place for the people to have the say-so. That's the ace card. Factually.
You brought up something specific about the city council in your city, right? That they don't allow the citizens, which is crazy, not to ask them questions. They can only make a statement. And you think that's wrong. Now, I'm going to prove to you that the people have limited power, because I'm going to challenge you, since you think that's wrong, to create some type of force or hook up with some type of force who's probably against that. There's probably a bunch of people that guess that.
We are.
Let's see.
I am.
Let's
well,
see.
What are you talking
right,
about?
Well,
guess who I heard it from? I heard it from somebody else.
Not raise
please
your
be
voice. Let me finish
you
what I'm saying. Good God. Well, you know what? Why don't you keep us
I heard it from somebody else.
Progress.
That's a big talk in Baltimore. Right. This is local news I'm telling you. I am
right,
a very
well,
impressed
you know
of
what?
So what is your challenge?
Prove me wrong. I bet they won't change it.
All right. Now, you good now? Okay. All right. Go ahead, Michael. Your mic is open now.
No, I was just using it as an example. People are working on that, Beasley. I brought that up for an issue. I know my local politics. You see what I'm saying? And I'm saying this, when it says stating the problems, we always state the problems. Why can't we say, okay, we're going to come to the solution? And just like your co-host says, in ancient of times, this is how life is. He said ideologies, but it's concepts, the ideas. And that is not right. That's not a good concept. When you cannot dialogue and go back and forth with the people that you voted in and to see their response, because I think they're scared to talk to the public, converse with the public. That person should be able to come and ask any question and get a response from their senators or their delegates. And I'm letting you know, it's being pushed on the ballot. It is what it is. We're working it up right now. Hold up, Joe.
Okay.
You and Beasley always demean BTR. You always have this concept that no one is going to – you're not going to make a movement. You're not going to do nothing on BTR. That's a lie. If you hear me make a good idea – won't you write your senators, email your senators? That's one step forward. Don't never take these conversations and demean these conversations that we have. Because people that be listening, may you never know, may say, you know what, I'm going to email my senator on something like this. So I'm saying basically that's all I want to say for right now.
Okay, here's another question then.
BTR has been in business for six or 7 years?
And you've been on it for 6 or 7 years.
No, I haven't. I've been on here for less than a year. But hold on. Show me something great that's come out of the 7 years, BTR.
All right. They forgot who's in charge. All right. Go ahead.
Okay. Thanks. Mike, I agree with you that the people theoretically have the right to, govern their own lives, and they have the right to try to change laws and the powers within the people, at least theoretically. So what you're saying is that the people should get together and change the laws. Why do you think it is extremely hard for people to get together in order to do that?
Because you have agitators in the mix of it.
Thanks, Mike. Now, the other Mike, what do you think?
Oh, I guess I need to unmute.
Oh.
Go ahead, Michael. Go ahead, Mike.
Because because we need to change the dialogue. Most people don't worry about politics. I'm not saying people would be like us talking every day. Everybody's not like that. But to be mindful of some type of politics, at least know the three branches of government, at least know what's going on, at least say you can come to any conversation and say, you know what, I believe in this. I'm voting for this guy because of this, and stand firm. Say you're undecided, but at least believe in the vote. And we must say, when we won the right to vote, yes, it was a right to vote. Not saying we must vote, but it was a right to vote. And I think that we should share our right and express our right. But if you're complaining about politics or playing about what these people are doing, and you're not making an attempt to voice your opinion in some way, looking at your vote as money, you're exchanging your vote. If they're going to spend money to get your vote, that's an exchange. So your vote is worth something. Your opinion is worth something in the society because other people are governing you. That's all I'm saying. You should be a part of it.
I understand that. I understand what you're saying. You're saying that people have the right. My question is, why is it that people aren't doing it?
Because they got their mind on other things.
Okay.
I mean, but I'm saying, but of course it has to be a balance. I'm not saying everyone is a politician, and some people just don't like talking about politics. But I'm saying those people who just alienate themselves from and always talk about Well, hold up. You have some people who do talk politics but just don't vote because they think it's a conspiracy. And I say, hold up. You have a lot of people out there. So we have more people. We do.
All right. Hold on. Now, number one, who's making that noise? I need you to stop, all right, because it's killing my ears. All right. Number two. You know, Mike, you said something. When we won the right to vote, we didn't win. No, we already had a right to vote. You know, but we were just bamboozling into thinking we didn't. Now, it was definitely given to us, you know, to make us feel it was more of an appeasement.
When you put it on paper, you can put somebody in jail. That's what I'm saying.
Okay, I'm talking. You don't talk. Now, I can help you shut up. But, you know, it was like an appeasement, you know, to make everybody think that some great thing has had happened when in actuality we had the right from day one. You know, it's just the non-education of the black folk that kept everybody disbelieving that, you know, we didn't have the right to vote. All right, so that's all I want to add to that. But let me bring Les Jackson in. He had a little comment.
Can I go after Lex?
Good afternoon once again, everybody. You know, okay, here's what I want to say about that. We talk about that right to vote, and you know what? You were right when you hit it on the head right then. We always had the right to vote. And I'm not going to say it was because we all gathered together, even back in the day, and we sat back and had little community group meetings. But here's one of the problems. If I had a protest right now and told all of you not to go out and support XYZ company, how many people would you sit back and think that would actually do that? We don't want to unify. See, we love being controlled. We love this puppet on a string. We love this puppet on a string thing that's going on. And until we get that mentality out of us as a group of people, and it's not just all black because there's more white folks on welfare than it is black.
It's more poor white folks. They don't know what $100,000 is.
Hold on, wait. It's more poor white folks, and it's a fact, as Mr. All Facts would say. It's a fact. Because if it's more of them, then you know more of them got to be poor. So, I mean, let's use basic common sense. But we don't want to support nothing. We want to support, and we got out there just like with the Trayvon Martin thing. We got out there for the 1-2 days, and just gathered together and got all emotional, and we were all into it. A week later,
can I say something?
It wasn't but about 100 people sitting there, if that many.
Can I say something real quick? I just want to say something, and I want to say something, and I want to ask your co-host a question. Mr. Talk, I understand we had a right to make money when we first come over here as slaves, but we didn't. I understand, of course, our natural right to vote. Of course. It was a divide when in the North black men voted for Abraham Lincoln. Only men could vote. Only black men could vote. So women were being discriminated back then. Okay? I understand it. But when we're talking about laws and civil rights, just like the 3/5 cause, the Constitution was messed up, so we had to amend something. The reason why I said the civil rights, you have the right, Civil Rights Voting Act, is because when you put something down in writing, on paper, recorded, time, everything, factual information, this is what we mean, and you're going to enforce these words out, you have to put it in the words, and you have to put it in law and legislation. The reason why, because you can lock somebody's ass up if they take your rights, and you can go to court, and you can go to jail. It's real serious. Come on now. Now, I want to ask your co-host a question. He was talking about the forms of government with Plato and things of that nature. In his opinion, if this government is not structured right, what type of government would he deliver to his people? If he had a chance, and I ask this to anybody, if you had a chance, how would you run your people? How would you govern your people in your new land? How would you do it? Would you use a dictatorship, a democracy type system, you know, this type of laws? Would you have a voting system or not voting system? I want to know.
Well, if I had a bunch of them like you, I would just have to get rid of them all. I'd be a dictator. Now let me stop. Actually, you know, Mike, it depends. It depends because you know one person will actually rule, as you say, or govern in a different style. You know, me personally, hey, you know. Let's talk about this thing first. You know, let's come to common ground on it, and you know, if it's unanimous, no. It's unanimous. But that's about it. But
hold on. What do you mean by unanimous? Let's say you have a village of 2,000 people, and you're running people. Are you going to come together to vote, or everyone has to agree at the same time? Yeah, sir. I want to know.
You know, if you're not discussing economics along with politics and how the people produce and survive and live, then it's just not politics by itself. Mm. And the reason, and politics now is completely corrupted.
Right.
Money rules politics.
So how would you ensure no corruption in your community? I mean, give me some ideas. No one says anything.
Shoot them. And
all
wasn't nothing
smart
wrong
people,
with the 3/5 clause.
Give me some laws that you're going to have that rule your people. Since you criticize American government and the laws is messed up, I want to hear.
I'm going to believe in frontier.
You want to know something interesting? Bianchi said shoot them.
I wouldn't be supreme over the people that I was governing.
They had a
all
billionaire.
Right. Okay, hold on, y'all, because y'all, I can't hear nothing.
I got something to say, Eric.
Okay, well, you're just going to have to wait till after these two calls come in. Let me welcome Lady T into.
Another new caller.
All right. Back away, Lady T.
Maze, you got a police standing on?
You got one of yours.
Okay. Get away from the computer. All right. And we're going to welcome Vernon also.
If there's a Vernon. We got to turn our radio
off.
Oh, Vernon. Hey, cuz.
What is that?
What
is
that
noise? Somebody
I got it. Radio on. Hello? Yes, Vernon.
Yeah.
Hey,
oh, I sound good now.
Yeah.
Somebody had the radio on.
Yeah.
Hey, I guess that's what it was. How's everybody doing?
Hey, cuz.
Great.
Good.
I heard Eric ask the question about, you know, who is our own worst enemy. I think that was the question that he asked, right? I'm right.
Who's America's biggest enemy?
Yep.
Huh?
He's American.
What's America's biggest enemy?
What's America's big? America as a, you're talking about outside, inside. I think the biggest enemy is the people inside of America. You know, for one, we all have become so individual and chasing the American dream that, you know, nobody stands together anymore. And that leaves your government in a place where they can do what they want when they want because people are not going to get together to try to change anything that they do. You know, they'll argue about it, they'll fuss about it, just like we do on this BTR show. We can't compromise on anything. You know,
they'll get shot, Bernard. And they'll get shot. Know, some people don't agree. And get killed.
Yeah,
by trying to change something.
And that's the people. We are our biggest enemy. I believe what Michael said on that, you know. Like I said, being individual, and I'm going to tell you, chasing the American dream, ain't nothing wrong with that. But in the process of chasing the American dream, we also become selfish. And we don't care about the next man, and nothing else is going on in the next man's house. It's all about us and what's going on in our house. So that weakens us, and that actually makes us our own worst enemy.
Yep. Hold on for a minute there. You know what? That's some very good points. But I want to make this announcement real fast. All right, y'all. We got 9 minutes left in live air time. And if you want to continue to hear the show live, you need to be on the lines 347-838-8622. And because we will be going in overtime, and I'm sure you don't want to miss the rest of the show. Okay, and for those that will be leaving us, thank you for joining us today, and I hope to see you tomorrow. Now, since I have said all that, let me bring my co-host in because he's been trying to get in. Y'all just won't be quiet long enough for him. So I'm going to give
you...
You
know who it was.
Go ahead, Akeem.
Okay, I've been taking some notes, so I just want to make sure I got them down correctly from what some of the things people have said. So far, I've heard that... Some of the enemies of America are government manipulation of markets and economy. I've also heard the people, their selfishness, their inability to work together, to find commonality, to work on issues collectively. I also have heard that I talked about the war of ideas, and our people are their own enemy. It seems like that's been second in by others as well. And I've heard, I think Mike talked about consciousness and our consciousness. I heard about mental subordination, mental oppression, and dissolution, being dissolution and fear being part of our problem. I've also heard about our inability to capitalize on our power, the power of having human capital that is one of the most overlooked. Also heard that a big issue as well as I think low, I don't know if he said this exactly, but he talked about the finance and how you can have all the money you want, but you know the economy and the currency can change tomorrow, and your money, your fiat money, will show its true value then. So we talked about the power of the consumer habits, you know, how consumer habits basically determine economic scale, you know, currency, its value, the product value, transparency. We talked about transparency in government that yields results. I also wanted to point out a few current recent examples of things that have been done or accomplished by the people. Things like change.org, where people use petitions to address various issues, including political issues, but also issues like just getting something off of the TV screen or whatever. We talked about what happened with Occupy Wall Street, and a group of people for a short period of time did come together collectively with a similar message. We talked about the bus boycotts of the past, how we champion change with our dollars by saying, no, we will not spend money on this company, and enforced some changes. There's also consumer consumption and habits where something like Bitcoin, where people have decided to change the dynamics of commerce, of currency, and decided, look, your American dollars are irrelevant to me. I'm going to go with a new economy. I'm going to create my own. So they've created Bitcoins and things like that. And we also saw the revolution via Twitter and other ways in Syria, where people champion change collectively. I say all that stuff to say, if there's one thing we've noticed, and I'm sure you guys have noticed, two of the most powerful people in the world are often people with a background in law, you know, the lawyers and people with that background. You look at all your politicians and people who are finance experts, the people who really know how to work the loopholes in finance, move the money, separate the money, create, make the fiat look like legitimate money, and screw people over with all type of financial schemes, hedge money, and that sort of kind of thing. I think that everybody said something very, very on point, and I think everybody said something that complemented each other, in my opinion, because it's true. We can change the consciousness in our mindset and change what's happening. Now, we have to determine whether or not we're going to allow fear, disillusionment, those things to stop us from moving forward. And the question we always ask is solutions going forward? What can we do today to start changes within our own immediate life? Now I pointed out those examples because those are examples of people who did do something, you know, some type of change, whatever, at whatever scale, whether it was change.org, whether it was Occupy Wall Street, whether it's the bus boycotts, whether it was Bitcoin, whether it was Syria. In each story, we saw somebody who sparked some level of change massively, whether it was on a micro or the macro level. We need macro level change. We need the impact distribution and manufacturing and infrastructure and you know, how water is purified and cleansed and how we determine our energy structure and what type of energy that we're going to use and how we can create our own organic produce and things of that nature. But I don't personally believe that we need to abandon government. I think that government, when worked right, when worked well, can work. And I think that we've done it before and we can do it again. We helped build America. So I'm not a believer in abandonment. I'm not one of those people who they say go back to Africa. I would love to empower Africa, but I'm not leaving after my ancestors helped build up a country. I'm just not going to do it. I'm sorry. That's just not me. But and that's all. I said a lot, so I'm going to say that.
Wow. Yeah, you put it out
there. I got something to say here.
Go ahead, Pianki.
No, I was going to, on that issue about the enemy of America, and I also was going to tell Mike, it wasn't nothing wrong with the three-fifths clause. You're just looking at it wrong because of what you heard,
explain it.
No, but see, that's what's wrong with America. See, you have a conservative like you that would
Eric,
look at the three kids off.
Can you control him because apparently he don't know what he's talking about. Need to read.
You know what I'm talking about. I can speak a fact.
Well, what
I'm,
did the three-fifth clause apply to, Mike? Tell me.
I just want
to
say something
all.
Factually.
Us what the three-fifth clause applied to.
All right, go on and finish your statement, PA.
My goodness, some of that old ghetto knowledge. But anyway, as I was saying, there's two things, events that came along and really hurt American people. One was when in the Constitution they recognized corporations. No, it wasn't in the Constitution. It was from a court decision when they recognized corporations as being people.
Thank you.
And just recently, Citizens United. So, those who have a disdain for voting, especially voting on a national level, a little bit less on state, local level, you should have control over. But candidates only are concerned about those entities that fund their campaigns. American people cannot outspend corporations. There's no way that that's going to happen. So when Citizens United came across the president's desk, there was practically a last nail in your coffin. So I just wanted to get those things. And you know, another thing, too, the best laws at one period of time in this country was frontier justice. That was Joe mentioned. Mm-hmm. It's frontier justice, especially in the West, that laid the basis of the laws that apply to much of this country today. And the reason why is because people themselves worked things out. They came to agreements. They had guns. The same thing happened in the northeast corner of this country, up in the Maines and the Massachusetts with the land barons and the pheasants. So that's all I wanted to say.
Really? Could you explain the three-fifths?
May I respond? No, I would like to give my rebuttal. I mean, you just muted me. I started to give my rebuttal. You challenged me on the three-fifths clause, and I'm challenging Frederick Douglass also. I would like to have my response, Mr. Tarr.
Go ahead, Mike.
Well, first of all, he's talking about this Frederick Douglass stuff. I spit on every concept that he has. Bianchi, I don't know what you're talking about. Come on, you English, you're a professional, and you're saying it had nothing to do with the slaves. It wasn't right. That was a pro-slavery document, factually. Now, you're talking about what is it all about. Basically, it was talking about that the South was going to have more delegates in the House as representatives. And it goes, and the House goes on how many people that you have in your district or what have you. So they said counting them property. They said, well, you count slaves as property or things of that nature. And that's how much you have. The Northerners said, no, you can't do that because you're going to have more delegates come. And so they said, we're going to count three-fifths of those Africans that's living in that district. We're going to only count three-fifths of them, because if we count all of them, they'll have more delegates. Well, I want to say factually, when they put that clause there, they were looking at a group of people, and we say we have to treat them special. And I go back to what you guys were saying, Les and Mr. Talk. You said we had the right to vote from the beginning. If we had the right to vote from the beginning, they would not have to come up with the three-fifths clause. Those you would have black delegates, and all those people would have been counted, and this whole Constitution would have started off correctly. But when they put that writing in there, they examine it. They're setting a group of people aside, and guess what? They have counted the people. Don't you tell me that they didn't demean the people. That is a pro-slavery document as it was. That's why we had amendments, and that is a fact. So you can take that Frederick Douglass bull stuff. I'm looking at what the men did and what they wrote on the Constitution factually. And guess what? The people that they were counting didn't even have
Are
a chance
done?
To vote anyway. The people
because
listen,
what you don't say is
listen,
really
well,
not
hold on,
true.
Hold on. It is. It's a fact.
Don't
now,
spread it
now,
out now. Just go ahead and for the sake
now,
of time, let's
fact.
Just go ahead and
now,
get it over.
Watch this fact. The three-fifths, listen, watch this fact. The three-fifths that they did count, those people were not even represented in Congress because they were damn slaves. You cannot come up with a special mathematical fucking formula to somebody like that in the Constitution when this when this nation was founded. That first document I spit on. That's why we had to have amendments. And I'm speaking fact. That's all I got to say. For now.
No, for now. All right. Well, man, I tell you.
Somebody
We wait for Bianca to explain the three-fifths.
I'm finna bring
somebody. Somebody needs to clean the spit off the Constitution, though.
Yeah,
they should. The Constitution is a very elegant document.
Bianca, we are still waiting for you to explain the three-fifths.
I've actually seen it before. I think it's in the Hall of Archives. It's right there. It's under thick glass.
In Pennsylvania, absolutely. You know, Mike, it had
I
nothing
it
to do with
Washington,
delegates.
I thought it was in
D.C. Well, there's several
of
them. It had nothing to do with delegates. It had to do with representatives, just as it do today.
No, delegates.
If you was right.
Mike,
I'm sorry,
Mr. House of Representatives, not delegates.
Now, see, God. Well, you need
Thank
to hurry up too, or stop trying to run my show. Hurry up.
I'm not trying to run your show. But as I said before, it had to do with representatives and the apportionment of taxes. If the Southerners was counting slaves as heads, then that would give them more representatives to Congress. And if they had more representatives in Congress, then they would have the ability to vote more favorably for the disbursement of funds to the southern states. So it wasn't nothing wrong with the three-fifths clause. At that point in time, slaves were not considered citizens. They couldn't vote anyway.
It was
three-fifths of a person for counting. Now, here's another thing. That was eliminated with the 14th Amendment, which done the same thing on the apportionment of tax. You know the funny thing about Article 1, Section 2, Clause 3 of the Constitution and the 14th Amendment? It excluded Indians from paying taxes, which I really enjoy that. But that's basically what it was. If you got you had 4 million slaves in the South, that would give you an advantage when it came to choosing representatives that would go to Congress representing the Southern states.
Okay. Wow. All right. But of course, they couldn't vote, so it really didn't matter, did it?
No, they weren't even citizens. They weren't citizens until the 14th.
There you go.
Which came about in 1778, I believe.
That's it right there.
1878, I'm sorry, 1878.
Well, thank you for that. So let me bring these two. You know, and that's interesting, though. You know, everybody want to jump back on the Constitution and what it means and how great this thing was. We must understand that the Constitution was not written for any person of color. It wasn't.
Well, it shouldn't
have
been.
Yeah, but that's the beauty of the document and this country. This country has the ability to change. And now, because of amendments to it, we are included in it.
But now you look what they're doing in the South to keep people from going to vote. They redlining and drawing out maps and stuff to keep them from still doing the same thing. You're still having a problem.
But
well,
when you draw up districts, when you draw up districts, Mage, you have a Republican and a Democrat.
So
you have equal representatives of the parties drawing up those districts.
And they're not representing nobody but themselves.
Hold on now.
Mr. Talk, can we use logic, Mr. Talk?
Well, can I talk? Can I talk?
Yeah.
Thank you. All right. Now, Pianki, you know, you sound just like the establishment man. Well, when they draw up the districts, you know, they have their fair share of representatives there. It's all fair.
No, they don't.
That's hogwash, Pianki. It really is hogwash. And here's the reason why. Because in each district, there's always one district that is full of minorities that no one really wants to deal with. All right, so that's one of the reasons why they do they have redistricting in certain, because nobody wants to represent that one little minority district. You know that they know they're not getting any votes from, and they really don't care about. You know, they don't care about it. And to add to it, that one little district, they're not requiring or demanding anything from these people. Yeah, they may bellyache a few times about, you know, they district and they, you know, they district is not as representative as others, but that's partly their fault. But don't give me this thing about that redistricting is done on a fair level, because it is not. I don't care what. It's not done like that. All right? So
that's
what I got
to say. I'll use some logic real quick.
That's part of the problem.
Go ahead, Bianchi,
I think you just used some logic real quick, and it goes back to what Mr. Talk. If they did not have a right to vote, but let's say they should have had the right to vote, it wouldn't have been no three-fifths clause. Therefore, when they put the three-fifths clause, they were separating from slaves, and it's a pro-slavery document when this country was founded. That's factually because of the three-fifths clause. And guess what? Those men did not even live what they, you know, proposed to the world.
We know that.
They wrote all these words, and they did not live what they wrote. So you cannot say that the three-fifths clause is not pro-slavery. It's just a fact, Pianki.
And treaties were broken and still being broken. Today.
Well, you know, man, that's something to talk about. You know, I think
a bunch of people sitting up there looking at you that's working against this country. And no laws that they have to represent what they do to the people, except vote them in and vote them out. But they got all kind of laws for everybody else except themselves. Because half of them sitting up in the Congress and sitting on the Supreme Court should have been going home a long time ago and shouldn't have never been there.
Mm-hmm.
It's a lifetime appointment, and so is a federal judge.
Yeah.
Yep.
Most part.
Could I say something?
Yeah, go ahead.
Listen. After every census, depending whether a district has gained people or lost people, it requires redistricting. Each congressperson is supposed to represent about 230,000 individuals. And that's why they, that's how they go about drawing up districts.
But
you have to have a Republican and you have to have a Democrat committee equally divided in order to come up with, yes, this is the way we want to go, or this is not the way we want to go. That's all it is. It's based on the where people have moved compared to the last census. The last census we had here was in 2010. In 2020, if you got people that moved out of your district, then you stand a chance to lose a representative. That's what it was about. Three-fifth clause had nothing to do with voting. It had to do with counting heads in order to establish the number of representatives that
right.
people that
and
states
then
would
those
have.
Representatives
Mike,
and hold up. Okay.
My goodness.
I'll be quiet, but he just contradicted himself. I'll be quiet.
In 1789, the Constitution per representative was 30,000 people. So if you added 4 million slaves to that, then the South would have had more representatives.
Right, hold on.
It had nothing to do with voting.
Hold on. Guess
you
what? They
and the reason why it's
not. Hold on, listen to me. But listen, so what they did was... They didn't count the 4 million. What they did was they counted three-fifths of those 4 million. They still gave it a value. They still did the mathematics, and they still said out of that number, we're going to put a certain amount of representatives into Congress, and then those representatives vote on certain issues. So it did come down to voting. That's
it was
the
Northerners. It was the Northerners that came up with the three-fifth amendment.
It always comes down to the vote. That's why you send your representatives to vote on bills. I know what the fuck I'm talking about. You better read your history.
My goodness, why do we have to use such cursing words?
It's a pro-slavery document.
It was not pro. How could it be pro-slavery when it prevented the South from counting slaves?
Because the three-fifths clause read, why do they separate a group of people and say, we have to look at this group of people.
I got enough of this ignorance for today. Bye.
Why do we have to look at this group of people and do some special mathematics on? They did not have their right to vote. If they were counted, if all those 4 million people had the right to vote, it wouldn't have been no three-fifths clause. Factually. Read, brother. Look at their minds.
All right. Thank you, Mike.
How could they have the right to vote when they were just property?
Yep. Well, Mays, you got something you want to say? But that
yes,
is true.
And I just to sum up how they came up with their districts and everything, just think about all of the farmers that lost their land and they were taken away from them and pushed off of them. And this is how we got the Congress that we have today.
Well,
that's all I got to say.
That's all you got to say? Okay.
Mm-hmm.
You know, wow. All right. Joe, where you at? You've been mighty quiet.
Yep, I'm
here.
Can't
say.
Oh, here we go.
Yeah.
All right,
enough
well,
of that.
Well, I don't have anything much to say about this. I'm not that up on redistricting, so I should take a look into that.
Mm-hmm. That's why they got a suit going to the Supreme Court now in the South.
Yeah. And,
I don't know
how
it's
going
to come out with what we got sitting up there.
Well, see, and that's another thing. When this latest redistricting went on, you know, it was a shock to the establishment because, you know, it was like a lot of votes were coming out of places that they didn't figure would come out of. So, you know, and, you know, the GOP, they had to fix that. Plus, you know, with the new establishment, the new voter laws in place, you know, they're trying to get a handle on all that. And that's really, 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 you know, got things messed up right now. But, I mean...
Yeah, you wonder what's wrong.
But
and you
really,
wonder what's wrong with America.
Yeah. I mean, but really, it's simple, man. You know, they take the districts with the minorities, and they just push them aside. Yeah, you have a representative on both sides, but try and find them. You know? You'd be like...
Yeah.
You know, where they at? Oh, they're in Washington. Oh, they're on vacation. Oh, they're here. You know, and you're like, really, what is the purpose? You know, just to say they are in the district. They have constituents. You know, and then you have to also understand, you know, you can write them. You're going to get that formal letter that they send out to everybody.
Mm-hmm.
You can go up to their office and leave a message with their secretary, of course, whether you get it or not. And then if you're lucky enough to find them, they're going to give you double speak on that also. You know what I mean? Unless Now, if you can do it during an election year, then you may actually get spoken to the right way. But besides those things, it's not going to happen. And I don't care how great everybody say that this system is one of our problems and has become our enemy as well. Because what happens is a lot of individuals stay up in Congress, they stay in Congress, and you know why? Because people vote with the name they know. Eddie Murphy said that in The Distinguished Gentleman. You know, when he, you know, ran for Congress on the name, you know, nobody saw him. He just used a name that everybody was used to voting. And that's how these guys stay in, because nobody's really changed the status quo. You know, so that's all I got to say.
Well,
Hakeem,
but Mr. Talk, they can move around from district to district, and they'll move you. You happy where you are, but then they're saying, you know, you're in a different district that you don't even want to be in, just to get them to stay where they are. They pull a certain amount into them so they can keep going back and going back and back. But they don't want to put themselves in a district where they know people's going to vote them out. So that should be against the law, the thing that we see them do.
No, that's how they hide behind the law.
And not against the people.
Yeah, that's what they call hiding behind the law.
Yeah.
Use it for your,
and that's why we don't see the Senate change and we don't see the Congress change. Because if they did it right, it would look like a whole different picture.
I do agree. All right, Joe, you had something? I'm sorry.
Yeah, there was something to dovetail from what you were talking about. When you were talking about Eddie Murphy, and I didn't see the movie, but you know, he ran a politician, maybe a name that people recognize. There was an episode on Bravo. It was when Michael Moore had his show, and what he actually did in one particular town, probably the town that he was in, he ran a real plant. He called it ficus against the incumbent.
Mm-hmm.
The plant won. People voted for the plant. The plant won the election. The literal plant in a potted plant. That's how stupid people are.
And he probably went in a district where, like, Gail Hubley went to see them people, and they were going to vote for him, and he wasn't even running for nothing. It's like, leave the district the way they are and let the people come to the Congress the way they should be. And stop trying to redline and block it to keep people from going there that might do a job that you never did in your life and hadn't planned on doing, is going up there and getting rich.
You know what? That's just, wow.
That's
know.
How I see it. Because if you're 80 years old, you should have went home a long time ago anyway.
Well,
not making a lifetime. You turn around and say you hate government, but you've been there 30 years.
You know, I think to sum up what the biggest enemies of the government are the government and the people. And the people, because we're all dumbed down by the educational system.
I'm not. I see it.
You vote.
A whole lot of
you
people are not.
Democrat
they see it, but they're
the
not
time,
coming around
you?
Front.
Do you
point
vote Democrat?
What?
Do
well,
no, I don't.
It's dumbed down. I mean, this is how people
vote independent.
I don't belong to nobody's party.
That's right. You always vote independent.
But see,
but the people who always vote either Democrat or Republican, they're the ones that are dumbed down because they're always complaining about the Democrats or the Republicans. But they always vote the same parties in.
They're not
voting
for anybody.
But is that education system dumbed down?
Who's the biggest abortion?
In mathematics, who did you learn about in your American, if you take go back in your school days, living in America as a white male, when it comes to mathematics, when they talked about the history of mathematics, what were the first names that you heard?
I don't remember anything about the history of mathematics outside of Euclid and Newton, outside of that.
When you get into geometry, you start learning about the different theories and theorems, and they attribute them to the Greeks. But it's likely that the Egyptians knew all of those things. Obviously, Egyptians knew all those things about geometry.
Yeah, I learned about Ron
beforehand because of the structures they were able to build.
My point I'm trying to make is
when we talk about sciences, math, and mathematics, and we're talking about the history of it in American society,
white children supposed to be speaking Arabic names, where it math derived from, and some type of like the constellations and things. When you skip over and you say, well, let's go back in history class, and you stop at one point and don't go where it started from. No one is saying stay away from Galileo Galilei and Isaac Newton and all the, you know, European or the Greek philosophers like Plato. No one is saying that. But you got to realize, give a history of those two. And I'm saying that is not factually educating our people. If you
really
want to educate history, you must go farther back in history as you possibly can, present that to the class, then you move forward. I will never take nothing away from Newton. I will never do that. But we're going to have to talk about the bridge, the steps that came before. And I'm saying with this educational system, you got to look and say, hold up, bro. There's a lot of bias in the curriculum. Remember, we choose our books. There's different authors to different books. Even the White Society are talking about how the history books are going to describe 9/11. Is it going to be a conspiracy? Did America lie about it? What happened? All of these things is very important when we talk about our history.
What he's saying is true,
Joe.
It's
very important.
Let me ask anybody who knows this.
They start civilization with the Greeks.
I know, the Europeans. I want to ask anybody who knows this a question, because I think now it's either a year or 2 years since the new curriculum has been instituted. Is it true that in history classes...
Who's been instituted by? Who's been up in their room
listening to why they instituted it? Is it true that in history class that they're not teaching anything pre-1865 now? Your kid just graduated.
No. Right there, yes, they're teaching that, but that was a proposal in some school districts, some white school districts, because they don't want to talk about slavery. Some white school districts
and they
are
take
pulling
the name
out books
out of the book.
who gives a good favor when it talks about 9/11, when it's talking about Arabic. And, man, it's a lot of politics when you're talking about schools, and they don't want to talk about religious, the Arabic cause, and 9/11, authors are writing the books that
I can't imagine
read.
Them teaching
and they
about
have your
America.
Biases.
I can't imagine them teaching about America and
they
not
have
talk
to
about
propose that pre-1865. That means wiping out American history, the American Revolution.
That's what the right wing wants. That's what the white races want. Because they
don't
want to deal with that.
It tells their story too. It tells, you know, the Mayflower. It tells the story. It tells the story of Jamestown in 1620 when they developed Jamestown.
But see, if you start at the Civil War,
and it also tells the story because, despite being hypocrites, the guys that founded this country, the founding fathers, they made a pretty bold move that not too many at that time, no one really got away with. There weren't English colonies that were branching out and saying, "Hey, we're not paying your taxes. We're not dealing with this Jews. We're forming our own country."
Right, they ruled the world.
Right,
the world.
So, and when anyone used to speak up against them, I think the guy in Australia did it. And they would send the ships there, and they would send them across the world.
Mm-hmm.
So England was a major power. So that's part of this story too.
Mm-hmm.
And it's an important part of the story. And I can't imagine them teaching it.
But what I'm saying, the philosophy of the people who wants to start at the Civil War is because it talks about slavery.
I hear what you're saying. I don't want to be redundant.
Okay. No,
right,
I mean, the reason why, because most of the time y'all said I don't make sense, so I was trying to be redundant. But, I'm quiet.
All you got to do is say things three times and we get you.
All right. Anyway. Well, now, all right. Before y'all get this acting silly around here. All right. Let's see, 420. 420 my time, so... Yeah, y'all know what I got to do. I got church tonight, so we're going to get out of here on early. Yeah, I'm busy. I'm a busy man. All right, so we're going to let y'all get your last words in, of course. So we're going to start with Miss Mays. Mays, your last word, man.
It's like I said, history is everybody's history, but if you leave somebody's out, somebody always going to think their history is stronger than others. And if you never learned it, you can't understand it anyway. So once you start on it, everybody has a tire on this car, and then people will stop being so hypocritical of other people's history, as they learn. Just take a little pinch and learn somebody else's history to know that it wasn't created by one group of people. And that's all I got to say on that subject.
All righty. Well, thank you, ma'am. We appreciate your input. All right. Let's see. We're going to bring Michael in. All right, Mike, you have the floor.
Well, basically, I just said we're the enemy of our country if we, the people, don't think we have power and think that we can call these politicians out. And I think, you know, if you talk politics, you know, the person who you vote for may not win, but at least you're expressing your opinion, and you have the right to talk about politics if you vote, if you speak your opinion. But people who don't talk about politics and complain about the politicians and don't say no type of political views when it's time for voting, I just think, you know, it's just be quiet and don't talk about politics and say I don't get involved in that. And let other people control, let other people's ideas control you, even if you have a business person or a business corporation or anything. All the paperwork, all the applications, someone, the government, some entity is having some structure for you to do. So it is what it is. But great topic, and you guys take it easy.
All right. Well, thank you, sir. We thank you for your input as well. What, Michael?
Well, I just wanted to say I did ask your co-host a question. We were talking about the government, and he was talking about Plato and the democracy. I really wanted to ask him, in his government, how would he run it? Would he take some things from the United States democracy, some dictatorship? How would we run it? Because a lot of people saying the government is not being run right and they're all crooks. How can we ensure that people don't be crooks and be corrupted, you know, in our government, you know, to try to have a peaceful thing? And I think we should have a show about that.
All right. Well, thank you, Michael. I'll take that under advisement. All right. Mr. Beasley, you up.
Nobody cares about voting. We had elections in California yesterday, primaries, and they did the tallies, and 13% of the eligible voters in Los Angeles County voted.
that says a lot, doesn't it?
Yeah. People would rather do what they're doing instead of getting traffic to go vote. People, that's how much people realize how there's no change and nothing different is not going to make much of a difference. 13% of the people voted in the primary.
13%. Wow.
That's 87% of the eligible voters, and that's for the people that I guess they're registered in either party. That doesn't even take into account all the people that don't even bother to register.
So what's that? Is this early voting that's going on?
No, it's the primaries. You know, it's when they decide who's going to be the Democratic candidate for governor and the Republican candidate for governor and lieutenant governor. Okay. And I'm sure a lot of city councilmen and a lot of, you know, all across the board.
Okay, gotcha.
All across the board for the November elections and probably who they're going to decide for, you know, whatever Senate, you know, whatever, excuse me, whatever House of Representatives seats are up, you know, the state Senate.
Uh-huh.
Same thing that set up similar all over the country.
Mm.
There's a whole bunch of fakes and liars and smiling dudes that talk both sides out of their mouth that want to have all these positions.
Of course. That's how they get to that position.
Yeah.
All right. Thank you, sir.
All right.
All right. Last but not least, Joe.
Well, I think Michael has a good topic for a show. How can we, as the American people, how can we seek to effect change? I think that would be a good topic. People could, you know, give in their ideas, and we can find out which ones are valid, which ones aren't. Now, also, I want to remind you that, you know, I think you have the good basics for being an entrepreneur. So, in case you ever thought about it, you know, it's something you could pursue.
All right, sir. Thank you. And I do appreciate it. Like I say, we'll work on that one.
Okay.
All right. Thank you, Joe.
Mm-hmm.
All right, time for my co-host to come in. You know what? It's amazing. We run the show, but we sure don't get much time to talk.
Oh, man, it's yeah, that's it's awesome. Yeah, I agree with everything, a lot of things that were said. I definitely think that topic, that show topic, would be an awesome show to not only answer Michael's question, but to for all of us to participate collectively in trying to share some ideas and hear other people's ideas. I think, you know, this show was definitely great. I mean, there were definitely some moments that were wild in the Miley Cyrus concert, but it has been a blast. One of the things I got out of this show was to continue to try to raise my level of consciousness and definitely to put words into action. You know, not to just sit on my hands and feet and things of that nature, but definitely if I see an issue, definitely go for it, act on that. And I enjoyed it. I love every idea that's expressed on a continuous basis, whether I agree or disagree. But I like hearing it. I like hearing what everybody has to say.
All right. And you know what? I just came up. That's the show tomorrow. How would you run your government? Or how would you run your country? Yeah. Yeah. What you think?
I like it.
Yeah. So now you know. That's what it's going to be. How will you run your country? So I can't wait for this one. I really can't. All right. Thank you, co-host. And I see you tomorrow. We really need to talk, but I'll work it out. All right, y'all. It's been another great show here on Let's Talk. And I want to say thank you to everybody that participated, especially those still in the chat room, H2O, Granny, guests 1321 and 6492. Thank you for being here. And everybody still on the line, I appreciate you. Oh, you know, because I know sometimes y'all get tired of hearing the same old thing over and over again. But you know what? Sometimes you have to keep saying the same old thing over and over and over until eventually it sticks in the brain and it's time. You know, it sticks in the brain and you get the message and start making something happen, you know. But it's all good. You know, y'all, hey. That's what we got to do, repetition. You know, then all of a sudden it's just easy. All right? Well, that's going to do it for us, man. I want to say thank you. Oh, tomorrow's show, how would you run your country? That should be a very interesting one. I want to know. We want to know. All right? And we probably have a song of the day tomorrow. You know, I'm getting kind of do-do-do-do-do, dancing. All right. But tomorrow, 2 p.m. Central, 3 Eastern, 12 Pacific, 1 Mountain Time. Mm-hmm. Remember, keep smiling, show appreciation. Forgive with an open heart. Make sure you have forgiven yourself first. And the biggest and the best thing, learn to laugh at yourself. Because if you can't laugh at yourself, man, I'm telling you, you'll never be happy with anyone else. And that's a fact, Jack. All right. Well, that's going to do it for us, man. For Hakeem and Mr. Talk, y'all have a good one. It's been real. Bye.
Bye-bye.